Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is September 3rd, 2004. Today's session number is BED 2004-03. Today's speaker is David Bella. The lesson for today is Understanding Complex Human Behaviors Beyond Blame, Thinking in Loops. Let's listen in.
Okay, then if you're out doing the cleaning, okay, you look over here. It all looks reasonable. Then, of course, if you go get a PhD in university, you can really specialize. And you can specialize in this, or that particular plant right down there you can specialize in, or this particular kind of fluid mechanics. Okay, I taught fluid mechanics. Or that particular kind of structure. The point is that when you look at the parts, they seem reasonable. When you look at the whole, it's absurd. Okay? Because you get the idea. That's the idea in it. And that idea is sort of what Escher's given us here, I think, is a very profound insight and a warning. That if you try to understand the problem simply by breaking them down into nice, manageable pieces, well, the whole may be absurd. But the pieces may all look reasonable. And so if you take a university, first thing we do is break it down into pieces, specialized departments and disciplines. And the students learn when they go in one course to think one way, they go in another course to think another way, whatever you need to do to pass the test. And you might say, yes, but the professors get together. No, they don't. The professors don't know how to get together and talk. And if you bring up a topic that doesn't fit in their area, they'll sit there like they know, and they may not have a clue what you're talking about. A clue. Because outside of their discipline, they've been intimidated as much as the rest of us. When you get outside, like mathematics. I mean, 9 out of 10 people, what they got out of mathematics was intimidation in their last course. Oh, thank God I don't have to take that course again. Okay? So breaking things down into parts, you see, is a problem. But we could also do this for a study of Scripture. Here's this verse. Okay, what does Peter say? Text and context. The bigger view. You have to look at that. And you can end up with some pretty absurd stuff. And, of course, in the history, we've done that. Okay, now what I'm going to do today, I have to sort of back up a little bit. How many went to at least one of the sessions on evil? The videotape. Okay, a few of you. Okay? And about half of you. That's one thing about Holdings. You can't assume the people you're building on in the past one. You have to invite the other people. And yet, if you're a teacher, you always want to say, what did I learn from the last session? And one of the things we have to come to grips with, what I'm going to call here, are models. Now, unfortunately, I was going to give 5 sessions. Then it got to cut down to 4. The one I cut out was models. But it turns out our discussion last night, we need to understand that. What I'm going to say is that the world is far more mysterious, complex, wonderful, dangerous, all the rest of that, than our understanding of it, the world. And so to understand the world, understand ourselves, we always have to make simplifications. Okay? You can't, the world is much more wondrous and complex, and I would say this in a scientific discipline, academic, or religious community. It doesn't matter. The idea that you're going to be able to tell exactly what happens in the complex world is very naive. Okay? And I say that emphatically, and I have. In publications, and as far as I know, no one's really disagreed with me. So what we have to do is we have to construct models of the world. And some of those models are in the form of stories, metaphors, but a lot of the models are sort of lying in the background, and we don't even know that we're using the models. And what happens is we start squeezing the world into our models, and we make the big mistake of confusing our world with a model. It's kind of a form of idolatry, really. Okay? The world must conform to our model because our model is our reality. And so one of the things that I've had to do And by the way, most of my field was computer simulation of ecosystems. I was in the formal modeling for about 20 years. And then in the 1980s, I sort of got out of that, just as everybody else was coming into computers. Okay, so one of the things that we have to do is to understand the models. We have to look past all the distracting details to try to uncover what is it we're really saying. Because you throw in a whole lot of stuff and it hides the model. Computer models are notorious for that. You have so much computer stuff, so much, that nobody knows what's really still the assumptions within the model. They forget. And I could give you examples from that. What I want to do is simply take an ordinary experience, and I want to show you how to kind of uncover models. And what I want to do is I want to introduce a new approach to thinking about things, a new way of modeling in them. Okay? That's what I want to introduce. Because if you have two ways, if you know two ways, and you realize that, boy, I can see it this way, or I can see it this way, then you're less inclined to simply believe the model is your real world. You see what I mean? Because you've already learned that there are different ways of looking at it. And then, of course, you have to go out in the world, and you have to decide when to apply a model and when not to. And all models have limitations, all of them, including the ones I'm going to give you. Okay, so what I want to do is take a common experience. As a teacher, there are some classes that are dead. Okay, anybody been in something like that? Dead, oh, the students walk into these classes. And one of the things that happens is the students don't ask questions. Okay? Now, if you go into the faculty room, what you'll hear is, yeah, the students don't ask questions because they really don't care about learning. Okay, that would be what you'd hear. If you go with some of the teachers, yeah, we don't ask questions. The professor really doesn't care. So boring. Oh, it's so boring. Oh, you know, puts me down when they ask questions. They'll say things like this. So that may, on one level, there's a disagreement. Who are we going to blame? The students or the teachers? And we can sketch these out. Here's a sketch here, and these pens sort of, you know, they get diluted as you write on them. So I hope you can see them. Can you see them there? No, will that help?
Not much.
A little bit, though.
Okay, but I'll read them. You'll be able to get it. Students don't ask questions. Students don't ask questions. If you read backwards, you say because. Because the students don't care. Okay? And this one, students don't ask questions. Why? Because the teachers don't care. Okay, so you got it? So, on the one hand, that would look like two different ways of seeing the world. But when we make sketches, we may find that they're both the same model. Okay? Even though they're in disagreement. And you say, well, how could that be? Well, what I'll do is I'll construct a very different model. Not blaming somebody different, but I'll construct a different model. And under this model, every model has a certain discipline of how you approach the world. This one is you have to have a logical chain, a chain of reasoning. Okay? Now, the model that I want to do is we're going to start out with an assumption. Every behavior has a reason. And that reason must make sense from the perspective of the people acting it out. That's common sense. Okay, so everybody, every behavior has a reason, and the behavior must make sense from the perspective of the person acting it out. Okay, you got it? And a reason is shown by an incoming error. So in this case, students don't ask questions because the professor doesn't care. You could also read this forward. Teachers don't care, therefore the students don't ask questions. So this is how you read this. This one, students don't ask questions, the reason, because the students don't care. Okay? And this one, okay, students don't care, therefore the students don't ask questions. But the problem with this one is this one doesn't have an incoming arrow, and this one doesn't have an incoming arrow. And there's a second problem with this. Do you think that's how we got the reason by asking the students? No, I don't think so. So I don't think we've done that. Okay? And then the students over there, they're giving their reason, but then do they really go and ask the teachers, do you really care? No, they don't. So you see, by saying every behavior has a reason, and it has to make sense from the perspective of the person acting it out, what does that mean we do? What do we have to do?
Talk to the actors.
Talk to the actors. Ask them. And that's very difficult for professors to do. Because students figure out really quick when a professor asks them a question, what answer does the professor want? And then, in the students' words, they regurgitate it. Okay? So you have to really get the confidence of the students. And I used to have them out for potluck dinners, and I'd sit around and just listen to them talking about these professors. I don't take it all, I better not do that. You know? And they have this humor out there. Like in one class, they had a glass of water on the chalkboard. It was an engineering class. Now, why would they have a glass of water on the chalkboard? You know? That's to cool down the professor's chalk. Okay. And of course, the professor didn't know that. They would do different things to slow the professor down. They'd actually have study groups and elect, usually an older than average student, to ask a question. To slow them down. Slow them down. In one class, one study group, they even had a tag team. One with a wrestling. One guy here, one guy in the back of the room, and one guy would ask a question. And the other guy would echo, yeah, that's a good question. And then they'd transfer back and forth. In some classes, it got so boring and so lost, one class tried the experiment that every time the professor walked over here, they looked all alert. And when the professor walked over onto this side of the room, they just went on. They're just slacking down like this. And they could get the professor all the way over to this part of the corner of the room by the end of the class. And that's how they try to stay alert in class. So you learn these things from students. They'd have nicknames for classes, and they'd have phrases like plug and chug, cram and flush. Okay? These are terms that, you know, they had. So one of the things, if I ask the students, well, students don't ask questions, why? They give a bunch of reasons. And the professor talks too much, the professor goes too fast, would be one of them. So I'll put that one down. Okay. The teacher. Goes too fast. Ever been in a class like that? And students would say, it was a race. He won. And usually in engineering, most of them were he's. Okay? So you begin to get that. Now, but remember the rule I had. Every behavior has a reason. And the reason has to make sense from the people acting it out. That diagram looks the same as this. I just, you know, twisted it around. Except under the rules of this kind of modeling, this is an incomplete sketch. What?
A glass of water.
A glass of water?
When the students were asking questions, it was slowing the teacher down. So
remember the rule. Every behavior has to have a reason.
Why does the teacher?
Why does the teacher go so fast? Why did they say that's the reason? And you're not going to find that out by asking the students.
No.
You're going to have to ask the teachers. And guess what? One of the reasons why we teachers go too fast.
So students don't ask questions.
Students don't ask questions. All right?
Simple.
Okay, now let me just, first of all, validate that bit of data. Let's suppose that you were standing up here. Big class out there, or even here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, are there any questions? And then what I want you to do is sit there in total silence for 8 seconds. Don't ask. Don't answer. Somebody in the back of the room will be sleeping when I give these instructions, and then they'll ask a question, and everybody goes, oh, and they look at them. So everybody got the rules. Are you ready? Are there any questions?
That's 8 seconds. When you're up here, how long do you think it feels?
It never lasts that long, though.
Well, if you wait that...
I mean, the prof doesn't ever wait that long.
That's right. She's right. If you actually wait the 8 seconds, the questions will usually come. Sometimes it's up to about 5, sometimes 3. But when they actually time professors, they try to do that. It was either 1 second or less. Yeah. Are there any questions? Well, if not, what I'll do is... and they'll do that. So time, you see, is different. 8 seconds of waiting in silence is kind of like in rodeo, staying on the horse for 8 seconds. It's a long time. Okay? It's a long time. When you're watching, it's not. When you're on the horse, or trying to stay on the horse, it is. Now, here's the thing we notice by our simple example. They look different. One's in the form of loops, and one's in the form of chains. Now, it's at this level that we begin to see past the details of the arguments. And we say there's a different model involved. That is, at a fundamental level, we're seeing the world in a different way. So the issue isn't, who are we going to blame over here? I mean, in this model. Blame itself, a blame chain, is a form of a model. So while we may disagree on who to blame, we're sharing the same model. The way to explain that is blame somebody. You got it? And as soon as we take that model, our behavior is changed. When you blame somebody, you don't listen to them. And if you're blaming them, they're not going to give you honest feedback. Okay? And your own behaviors aren't going to be probably included. And you'll be separating them as very different from you. Okay? So what we see in here is that this is a form of a model. And this is an entirely different form of a model. So we have two different models here. Two different ways of seeing the world. Now, we can disagree over here and disagree over here. But what happens is, if I'm thinking this model and you're thinking this model, our communication just gets all messed up. It gets really, gets really messed up. So, I'll say it goes too fast. Are you trying to tell me that all these students really care about it? I remember this student out there, that student would, blah, 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 blah. I start telling you stories like this. Well, I taught and I know there's students who don't care. No. So, what can happen over in here is, I'll say, yeah, but that's not the point. Suppose we ask the good students. They're not asking questions either. Well, I don't want to do that. This is for the good students. So, now all models, when I do this, all models, mine or that one, have limitations. Now, the advantage in recognizing that there are two very different modeling approaches, two very different ones, the advantage of that is it reminds you that all models are shortcomings. If you only have one model, okay, then it becomes very hard. You start confusing your model with the world. And that happens to be one of the most fundamental mistakes we made. In fact, we might even say it's a form of idolatry. Everything in the world, God included, must fit our model, which is our own construction. So by actually drawing sketches to uncover the fundamental differences between models, we are reminded, okay, wait a minute, we take responsibility for our model. Now, when you use a model, you don't prove that the model is correct to describe the world. No model is correct. That's why we use the term model. It's a simplified version of the real world. But what you can say is, ask the question, does this alternative model provide us some insights into the world that the other model doesn't do? Is there something important that we get to see in this model that we don't see in the other model? And if the answer is yes, then what you say is, well, we better really take that model seriously. Now, that's also true in mathematical modeling. It's not that I'm just making sketches. Okay. All models are simplifications. Okay. And if you believe your model, no matter how sophisticated the math is, if you think that's the way the world really is, okay, then you have to watch out. Global climate change. for example, building complex models. People say, oh, I don't believe models. Well, what else are you going to use? We can't experiment with 1,000 Earths and find out what happens. So we have to use models. But when we use models, what we want to do is use multiple models. They have different modeling teams. Okay? And people generally do not, if they're a good modeler, even in mathematics, they don't say, we have made the precise prediction and this is what exactly is going to happen. They don't say that. They don't say that. If you really listen to somebody who's really a good modeler, they will not say that. They'll say, look, this is the best we know. We're put together the stuff that we know, and here's what we came out with. Is it perfect? No. You know, I can tell you some of the shortcomings of it. But what else do you propose? And if there's nothing else to propose, and this is a big problem, then maybe we better do something about it. That's how they'll talk. Okay? Now, what I propose to you is that this kind of modeling here, I think, can help us understand a great deal in the world. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to run through a few examples that I've given, and then this is the modeling approach that I will be applying to the Soviet biological warfare system tomorrow. Those of you who saw the video. And I'll also, we may have another session. Anybody know whether Emily set up? They may have another session on that, showing the video this afternoon. We'll see. Do you know if she set it up? Yeah. So I hope she announces that, because there were some staff members that couldn't come, so she asked me about that.
David, the one option up here, option we came up with was we have to be like at 8 tomorrow morning before the 9 o'clock session, if that would be possible, because she was going to talk to you.
I'll do it anytime. I have to pay 45 then, so you know, if you want to do that, that's any way that would work.
We'll announce it for sure.
And I leave that day, so maybe you should ask Cammie, because she'll have to do all the packing.
That's one option.
Okay, now,
can you
before you read...
Here?
Yeah, we got some more? We got some more up there? Okay, I got some here that they don't have the... Now, let me first tell you how I approach the problem here. When I'm teaching, there were 20 of them, and I have a couple more that don't have the one side. So, are we missing some? We missing some? What I'll do is, you'll be able to see the ones that are on there. And what I do is, I feel if I'm going to teach this to students, I have to teach them to apply it to their own lives. I don't know how many times people go on a math course and someone says, can you give me an example to something that fits my life? And the professor says, well, no. And the people say, if I can't relate it to my own life and my own involvements, I'm not going to understand it. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. So I give the students the practice, and the one I've got is the bench warmer loop. This is right from one of my students. Amen. And what I'll do is I'll turn it on, and you can read it, and we'll practice reading it. Now, we won't actually do it. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ray. Because it takes a fairly long time for someone to do this. Okay, this is not something real easy to do. I would guess the students must, you know, maybe at least a dozen different tries on this. At least. When I do some of them, 50. Boom. I mean, it's a lot more of a discipline than you think. But what do you do to read this? If you look at this and say, where do I start? Answer, any place you want. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, when I read a book, I have to start at the top of the page. You say, yes, that's right, because the book is sort of like the other model. It's in a line. These are not lines. And remember, if we're going to see something different in the world, we have to do something different. We do it in a fundamental way. So you may start anywhere you want, and you can read forward or backwards. You say, well, wait a minute, I don't do that in a book. I read, left to right, top to bottom, front to back. That's right. This is different. So you start anywhere. I want game experience. This is a bench warmer. Basketball team sitting on it. Therefore, I want the coach to play me more. Okay? Now, so you got, if I go forward on the arrow, I say therefore. Therefore, I want to impress the coach. Okay? Because, I'll go backwards, the coach doesn't think I have the skill. Because when the coach watches me practice, I don't do very well. Because I get nervous. Okay? Why? Because I want to impress the coach. Okay? Because the coach doesn't think I have the skill. Therefore, the coach doesn't put me in the game. Therefore, I don't have a lot of game experience. Therefore, when I get into the game, I don't do well. Because I get nervous. Therefore, when the coach watches me practice, I don't do well. Therefore, the coach doesn't think I have the skill. Therefore, I want to impress the coach. Therefore, I get nervous. Therefore, when in the game, I don't do so well because I don't have a lot of game experience. Therefore, I want a lot of game experience. You get it?
Yes.
You get it? Now, you know, it's surprising how many people can identify with that. Okay? You really want to go ahead and get involved. And you get caught in these patterns. Students would get procrastination patterns, loops. You know, I'm always behind in my work, so I get really nervous. Therefore, I rush and I get it all, blah, blah, blah. Therefore, I'm not very efficient. Therefore, I'm also behind in my work. And then it would loop around. You know, I feel like I need a break because I've been doing so much work to catch up. Therefore, I fall farther behind. And it's just this vicious cycle that gets there. I had one guy sketch the no girlfriend loop.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. I don't have a girlfriend because I don't have the social skills, because I don't go out, because I don't have a girlfriend. Okay. And then it would grow. It would grow.
Yes.
And therefore, I hang around with people who don't go out and so forth. I had one student in the class. He was a keeper. Now, you know, you get these in class you really like. They're really sharp. And this guy was a freshman. I hardly ever teach freshmen. He was a freshman. And the difference between freshmen and juniors, they're like different species in terms of maturity. And this guy would come in late, and he'd miss class. But he was really bright. So I said, "You want to pass the course?" He said, yeah. Oh, of course. He's an honor student. He says, "I want you to sketch me the pattern that you're caught up in." So the first time he does a sketch, red pen, bonk, bonk, that's it, you know. No, you gotta do better. The next time he comes back, he's so excited. He's so excited. This is so cool. And he's coming out of the shower and all that. And he throws out this loop. And what it was the video game loop. In the honors program, what would happen is they would get behind in their work in the dorm. And so they'd feel stressed out. So, therefore, they would want to do something to relieve the stress. Therefore, they played video games for half the night. Therefore, they got behind in their work. And then as they did this, they got better at the video games. And that reinforced the pattern, because here they're not very good in their classwork. They're better at the videos. I want to do something I'm really good at. And then they associated with other people who played. That was their social community. And he drew this whole pattern, and he's so excited. He says, "You should see these video games. They're so good, they're addictive." I go, "What?" Just think of that. They're so good, they're addictive. And they actually had a video game advertised. I don't know if you saw it. And at the gym, I do the Stairmaster. It's about the only time I ever see commercials. So I never get the sound. But you can tell this one. They had this guy coming out of, like, it was an AA, but it was Video Gamers Anonymous, and he's jittering, he's like this. His wife is assuring him he's okay. And he walks by this store, and he uses this new video game. The wife's, no. He goes in, gets the video game, plugs it in, and the next scene, you see him playing this game, and his eyes are bleared, and he's playing this game, and he's got this bowl, empty bowl of old popcorn he's been eating. And the last thing, he just collapses and falls down, and you see his face from the bottom of the bowl. Advertising the game! So, he tells me, you gotta come. So, I said, okay, I'll go. But I want to go in the middle of the week. I don't want you to say, oh, this is the weekend, what are we doing now? And I want to go, what's the time when students ought to be studying, you know, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, somewhere around there. It's a little early, oh, we're going to dinner. If it's later, it's time for bed. I figured that way. So I go up to the artist's dorm, and here they have this huge monitor. Administration, high technology, so we can beam in lectures from Germany and do all of this. Okay, and it's a split screen. And they're playing James Bond. How many of you played James Bond? Anybody? Well, what it is you're inside, there's four different views. And you're inside this ancient temple. And you're one of four different characters, and you're chasing around, running around this one with different weapons, trying to kill the other guy. And when your guy gets killed, blood streams down your view. So your view, you can actually see what your character sees. There's four of them. And they've got the sofas stacked up in three tiers like bleachers, and it's about 15 or 20 of the guys, and all the guys, and they're playing this. Four at a time. So I learned something. So the students are able to sketch these patterns out really well. And they were so honest. I saw some on abusive relationships, and they began to get the appreciation of how difficult it is sometimes to get out of these. They really began to do that. Now, the one I'll show you, well, first of all, let's look at the other one, what I call the we.
I have a question.
Yeah.
It seems to me that of these steps, that the faulty one is the coach doesn't think I have skill. And am I correct? Am I on the right track here? That if the student, if the bench warmer actually went and talked with the coach.
Yeah, if you're really nervous, it's going to be hard to do that.
Right.
So what we generally find is usually there isn't one behavior that you can take out into. You somehow got to deal with the whole pattern. You got to act. Remember when Jesus heals people, he would say, ask them, do you want to be healed? Okay. And if you got this thing, do you want to get out of the pattern? Okay. And that means that you really have to change, in a sense. You've got to stop acting out the behaviors as best you can. And when you first do it, okay. Now, of course, maybe the guy just physically doesn't have the skills, so that's a possibility. So, but when you first try to act out of context, this is the context, you have all these reasons why you're not supposed to do it. And you have to act in spite of those reasons. And you have, that's the only way you can break the pattern as a whole. Let me show you the next one, and then I'll go on to the last one. This next one comes up a lot. And it has to be with why we believe it, and it can be almost anything, okay? And it might be something very plausible, like the Earth is round rather than flat. Or engineers recognize, I did this for an engineering firm, F equals MA, that's from Newton's laws, force equals mass times acceleration. They all accept that. So then the question is, well, why do we believe it? Anybody checked out why the Earth is round rather than flat or curved like the hump of the back of a turtle? But we believe it. So when we find it, it turns out that the word we, is not simply the plural of I. Okay? It's the interaction, the nonlinear interaction. We believe things because other people believe things. And so what we hear is all of us believe it, okay? Because none of us sees any need to question it because we all know it. Therefore, because we all believe it, therefore each of us finds that everyone else believes it. Therefore, each of us assumes that this is the way things really are because we all know it. Therefore, none of us sees any reason to question it. Therefore, alternatives are not even discussed because we all know it. So you get the pattern? Now, what can happen, of course, is we can get locked into a lot of belief patterns about it in the system that are mutually reinforced. And the most extreme example of this are cults. They become so self-enclosed that, you know, they become the true believers. And so when we find, say, whether it's CEOs or government people or someone else, they say, Oh, did they lie? Well, maybe they did lie. But I think what's more dangerous is maybe they're true believers. I think that would be more dangerous. Now, one model would say they said something false, they lied. That's the lie, the chain. The other model would say, oh, they really believe it because they hang around with people and anybody else who doesn't believe that is kicked out. I think the second one is at least as scary as the first, probably the scarier. Now, for the engineering firm I was working in, they were in a mutual blame pattern. Two different offices were blaming each other. And so what each office believed is they're the problem, not us. Okay? And I could show you those blame patterns if we had some time. They're just self-reinforcing patterns, but within them, everybody believed it. Okay, now let's turn what I told the students for you. Is I'm going to give you, I told the students, now an example. After they had done their own, started doing their own, and I did some like out-of-shape loops they had to do. And I had some exercise. They had to listen to people and find the loops. A common loop is, I'm out of shape because I don't exercise because every time I exert myself, I get exhausted because I'm out of shape. Or you can read it the other way. Every time I exert myself, you know, I get exhausted, therefore I don't exercise, therefore I'm out of shape, therefore every time I exert myself, I don't exercise. And then the students would expand that. And becoming a couch potato, watching TV, blah, 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 blah. It just sort of evolved. And then they would discover, hey, you know, these loops are interconnecting with each other. My procrastination loop sort of fits this other loop. And they discover this. Well, the one I told them is, I'm going to show you a loop that the statistics indicates that half the students are going to fall into, and they're going to be miserable because of it. And many of you may already be in it. And you're certainly being pulled into it now. And that was a credit card loop. And I've shown some of the rest of you have seen this the other time. And so here is the credit card loop. Right in here. Now, you can read these later. And again, the only way that you can understand the pattern as a whole is to actually get involved and read it, forward and backward. It's kind of like getting to know the neighborhood or getting to know the village of Holden. The way you get to know it is you walk around it, you wander around, you meet this, you do this. You don't just fly over it, look down on it, and say, ah, now I know it. So if you see one of these diagrams, some people's first reaction, oh, this is too complex for me. No, it really isn't. You're just not used to it. Just not used to it. What you do is you read through the whole thing. I would ask students, well, you know, tell me your behavior. We get stressed out. That was a common behavior. We get stressed out. Well, why? Why? Well, they come up with some reasons. And one of the reasons is we just don't have enough money. And we got debts to pay. And some of those were external reasons, like, you know, how are we going to go through school? Some of them were. But a lot of them were reasons that came out of this behavior pattern. So I say, okay. We are stressed out because we can't pay off our debts and because we don't have enough money. Okay, just put those two down. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's a good reason to be stressed out. So then I say, well, let's now go the other way. Consequences, forward arrows. Okay, well, what do you do when you're stressed out? Well, we look for diversions. Well, what diversions do you do? Well, we space out on TV. Hey, it's free. And I go, isn't that really nice of those people? To give you all that free TV? And of course they sit there like saying, what do you mean? I said, what do you see on TV? You see the advertisement. I said, no, more fundamentally, what do you see? Even in the programs, never mind the advertisements. They said, we see a lot of happy people with a lot of great stuff. Okay? Okay? Therefore, we buy stuff because we're stressed out. And we see a whole lot of happy people. This all makes sense. Okay, so I said, how do you buy stuff if you don't have the money? Well, we charge it. Okay, well then what's the consequence? Well, we owe it. We owe a lot. But, hey, I work hard. I'm not like lazy. So I owe a lot, okay? And we don't have enough money, so we work hard to make more money. Yeah, hey, don't give us a break. Well, that contributes to our stress because we're working long hours. But it also means we deserve, like we need some sort of rewards. So we go shopping and we buy stuff. Okay, you got it?
Is there, yeah. One that has arrows both ways. From the top there, we can't pay off our debts, and down we work hard to make more money.
Yeah.
It has arrows going both, pointing both ways.
Well, look, you mean this one?
Okay. No, the bottom, the very bottom one, there, the bottom one, and up to the top.
Go to the left.
It goes into, we don't have enough money.
We don't have enough money, it's the box.
Follow.
Yeah, and then to go to the
okay,
left.
Okay, wait a minute, it goes
up to, we can't pay off our debts, no way up.
No, this way. Okay, because we don't have enough money. Okay.
We work hard to make up more money because.
No, see, we work hard to make all money because we owe a lot and because we don't have enough money.
It should go up to we don't have enough money then instead of to we can't pay off our debt.
Yeah, you've got to cross the line here. So.
Yeah, but the arrow goes behind that.
Yeah, it doesn't really go behind. It's just coming out of it.
Well, it just sort of goes up. The arrows, I should have made it look like one arrow's going over the other or something like that.
Yeah.
But so, no, you don't go like this and then sing back down like this.
No,
you
just follow.
You should say that it looks like that one arrow is continuous, but you don't mean it to be continuous.
Oh, you mean from this all the way up to there?
Yeah.
Now, all I'm doing is trying to artistically make it really look like this. Rather than have it look chunky. The way I read it is we work hard to make money. Well, why? We owe a lot and we don't have enough money. Those are good reasons to work hard. Now, you want to know the consequences of working hard? Well, hey, we're stressed out, and we work hard, so we feel like we deserve a lot of money. A student added one, this one for
yeah,
me.
That's a good one.
And she said, my parents do this all the time. So this, I originally didn't have this one in, and the student put it in. So I can read it. Now what I'll do is I'll show you, I'll just read the thing, and what we do is, we can't pay off our debts because we owe a lot. Because we charge it because we don't have enough money. Therefore, we're stressed out because we can't pay off our debts. Okay? Because we owe a lot. Therefore, we work hard to make more money. Therefore, we're stressed out. Therefore, we look for diversions. Therefore, we space out on TV. Therefore, we see a lot of happy people with a lot of great stuff. Therefore, we buy stuff. Why? Because we're stressed out, man. And besides that, we feel like we deserve rewards. But what are the how do you buy stuff? Well, therefore, we charge it. What do you think? You charge it. Well, we don't have enough money, of course. Okay? Now you notice it's the we. In the previous we. So the students are hanging around together. So every time you come to one of these behaviors, like we buy stuff, therefore we charge it because we don't have enough money. Everybody does it. Okay? Remember the we? The self-reinforcing? Everybody does it. Now, of course, it's not true that everybody does it, but the people you hang around with, everybody does it. So it's that the we in here is that reinforcing we. Okay? Yeah.
What I'm wondering is, it seems like they see all the things that relate directly to them, but they don't see, in a sense, how the system comes in. In
well,
the sense of, where's the thing here about the companies offering them out there like mad offering them?
Well, no, they get to that. They get to that. What happens is, what happens with these diagrams is you got to decide where to stop the loops when you get a pattern. Because you begin to realize how interconnected you are with these other things. So they're beginning to see it with the TV. But somebody, so then I'll just ask them, I'll say, well, how many credit card applications do you get? And they'll say, oh, we get them every day. Okay? Is that true? People in college here get a lot, they just get these. They're all over the place. And I say, I hardly ever get any. Well, I've had one credit card, and I pay it off every month, so they don't want me. So then I say, well, why do you think they're sending you so much? And they say, because we're vulnerable to that at this stage of life, number one. And number two, because we're in college, we'll probably have a higher income when we get out. So the guy mopping floors, you know, and working in McDonald's maybe, they may not send as much to that guy. But for us in here, we can get, you know, the companies can actually get a, change the cultures in terms of a consumer culture. And the students, therefore, fit into this. And probably the university probably provides the names of the students to the credit card companies. And the university now calls the students their customers.
So we've in a sense established this whole environment of you're the customer, and here along comes all these this wonderful stuff, these happy people with all this great stuff, and all their peers are caught up in the system, and no one really shows them this. A few students got this as a sort of something, this as a business opportunity. So they will teach it more in business school about how to do this stuff than they will teach the students about how you can get suckered into it. Okay? Now, one of the things, and you can do it later, is take this table here. This table. And in this table, you ask each one of the people a question who's in this system. And over here, they all have answers. And you just practice reading it with somebody. One asks the question, and the other one gives the answers on here. And all of the answers make sense to the people who are caught up in here. Okay? And what the answers are really linear fragments of a pattern. So if you want to ask a question like, I'll just pick one here. Why are you stressed out? Look, at the end of the month, it's really stressful. I work hard, but I just don't have enough money. I can't pay off my debts. I always seem behind. I hate it. Okay, now, that is this, this, and this. Three of them, a chain. Okay? So it's a chain of reasoning. By this model, it makes sense. And every one of their statements, if you go on and read, like, so you use credit cards? Yes, but not all the time. Sometimes, only when you really need to at the end of the month when I'm out of cash. That's consistent. It seems to make sense. And what it is a linear fragment, a chain, a piece of the loop. So, you see, we're back to Escher drawing. The whole doesn't make sense. But if you don't look at the whole, and you look at a linear fragment, a sequence, everything makes sense. In the same way, when I put up the Escher drawing, if I only looked at a piece of it, it made sense. If I looked at the whole of it, it was absurd. So what we're trying to do is we're trying, with this sketching, is to get people to look at the wholes, not just the pieces. And once they can do this for their own lives, then I will introduce to them from history and from contemporary affairs how people have been caught up in systems. One of them I do, and I've got a paper on it. I've got some papers. I'll leave them here in Holden so people can, you know, if they want to read them or make copies, you can do that. But one of the things I did is on slavery, 19th century slavery. And I went and I sketched out the loops based upon the writings of Frederick Douglass. Okay? Brilliant genius. And what we found in there, and then I took some other studies and added to Frederick Douglass, is that within the pattern of slavery, the behaviors of the non-slaves, those are the ones we have to explain. People like us, okay? They're free, you know? It's the non-slaves we have, and Frederick Douglass is a genius of the 19th century. I mean, he was in, you know, he's profound. And he was speaking to those of us, and usually white males in particular, okay? Because women didn't have the right to vote. And we all had good reasons. And he sketches out the pattern, and then I expand the pattern to show it in the paper. And what I'm finding in a lot of these patterns as I do it, the experts, the scientists, managers, engineers, experts, they get caught up in the systems. They can get caught up. This happened in 19th century slavery. Science provided the justification for slavery. And it started actually probably with Thomas Jefferson. They tried to get and they got caught up in the system. And science did this. The people who challenged the system were the ones who were generally marginalized in the system, pushed out. You take the abolitionist movement,
They were former slaves, African Americans, and women. Now, there were men also in there. And almost all of them had been Sunday school teachers or ministers or something like that, you know, or a large percentage of them. So what they were doing was really living out the prophetic tradition. And I think if we would see our faith tradition from the prophetic side, not just the priestly side. The priestly side is what are the rules and beliefs and so forth. You know. The prophetic side is sort of the non-expert who just, something's wrong here. They cause a disruption in the system which causes it to reform. And so the majority of the abolitionist movement were from people who were didn't have the right to vote. It's a profound movement. Okay? So I teach them that, and then I teach them some contemporary problems. And I try to go ahead and get them prepared for the systems that they may enter. They don't have the experience to know it yet. Some of them do. Some of them will come back, the older than average students. But I try to, in a sense, prepare them. And then when I go back to engineering firms, and I see former students, they'll lean out and they'll say things like, boy, there's loops all over this place. They'll say this. And in the statements of the students, they would, at the end, when they wrote down, he says, what this system does is forces you to listen more and blame less. And then you begin to see loops all over the place. You begin to see more. Yeah, Barry.
You threw me for a loop a little bit here. Backing up, you were basically saying that this model about credit cards, debt, that the whole, you compared it to an Escher drawing, but really the whole here makes sense.
No, the parts make sense. If you take the whole, do you want to live that way? And that's what I'd say. Does that make sense? Is it a good way to live? And they'll say no.
Oh, okay. So,
I see what you mean. Yes. I was metaphorically going a little too
fast. That whole thing makes sense. Yeah. But when you look at the Escher drawing and you see how everything flows, it doesn't make sense.
Well, here's how I would... If you look at this whole pattern and I ask you, does that make sense as a way to live? You would look at this and you'd say, well, no.
But the model makes sense.
Well, the model is sort of exposing the absurdity of the whole. Yes. And still allowing the pieces to look reasonable. Okay, so the whole, everything's logical. Every step is logical. But the question is, do I want to live that way? Then that's where we're hit. Now, when you want to break out, I'll get you a minute. Right. When you want to break out, the hard part is several things. The system gives you reasons to stay in. But I don't have enough money. It's true. It gives you all these reasons. Plus that, we haven't taught the students how to sketch out whole patterns. And so we've made them more vulnerable to these systems. Right.
Is it possible to start replacing each box with a positive instead of a negative statement?
You might. Solving,
you know what I'm saying here?
Right.
How can...
Well, I learned something from Martin Luther King Jr. And let's take our faith tradition, and I'll make two loops of what would seem to be a good one and a bad one. Okay? Okay? And I'll erase this. This was... I mean, I'd like to do that, but there's a danger in that, too. So the first loop is... We hate them. Where's the blue right here? We hate them because they hate us because we hate them. Okay? So there's a lot of that in the world. Okay? So we hate them. They hate us. And we end up with a mutually reinforcing loop. Now, we might say, well, let's make a good one. Okay. Well, you think this is a good loop?
No.
No.
Okay, think of, in our tradition, we tend to think of this in terms of a parent.
About what?
A parent and child.
Okay.
So would we say as a parent, well, I love them because they love us.
No way.
And they live up. No, that would be a dangerous one. Instead, and this is what Martin Luther King pointed out, he says, we have the notion of agape as love, which is what kind of love? Unconditional. There's no arrows coming into it. It transcends either one of those patterns. Because it turns out that this kind of pattern can drift into this one pretty quick. So what I learned on that is, you know, I started thinking of sketching positive patterns. And yeah, you hope that better patterns do emerge. But in the end, we have to base our faith not in our ability to construct good patterns, but on the transcendence. Okay? And the transcendence, agape, then, would be love that transcends any pattern. Okay? So your love is freely given. And that is the love that is expressed from God to us. So God isn't part of a pattern of conditional loops. God is beyond that and calling us to be beyond that. And we keep falling back into these other patterns. And I think when Emily did her service about giving and not expecting something in return, okay, how there was something special about that. I think that what that does is it helps to free us from all of these loops, even ones that are good. We need them. But we also need the transcendence. So that would be mine. Yeah. Good.
Dave, one thing I'll
get to you next.
And I like this whole system and just kind of try to use this. And I was mentioning last night that one of the things when you do this, it does reveal a lot, but it also becomes incredibly overwhelming.
Right.
Because there's, you know, it's not like the link where one thing. So
that's right.
When you get something that's incredibly overwhelming, it could be empowering, it could be totally pacifying. And so then it seems the next step, and I wondered how.